Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I'm your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
You know, it's unbelievable that after all this time, you're only just now adjusting to the fact that your audio, when you say "and," is so much louder than the rest of the show. Like, I think you almost properly adjusted that live. You're like a live technician where you're moving the things on the soundboard.
I've this Thanksgiving break has it's a new, I'm a new Kessler.
Unbelievable.
It's all new, all a brand new outlook on life.
Yeah.
I'm sleeping at the exact same, I don't know, I have no, I'm not.
You're trying to come up with something that's really
now, yeah.
Amazing.
I've been to a football game. I went to my first football game. That's the new.
Oh, geez.
It's boring. I don't get it.
What game did you go to?
The Egg Bowl, which is Ole Miss versus Mississippi State.
College
football.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Egg Bowl.
It's like, they're like Mississippi State, or Ole Miss is like an institution. They're considered the number one tailgaters in the country.
Yeah, I did a quiz the other day. This is my 10-second sports tangent.
Okay.
It's going to take longer than 10 seconds. And the question was, there's 50 teams in the history, or sorry, there's 6 teams ever that have had a draft pick from their school taken in every draft the last 50 years. 50 years straight without them. And it was like a quiz to win something. And I, like, me and my partner were like, oh, yeah, we guessed Ole Miss is one of the 6 because we're like, it has to be. They're like an institution.
Sure.
Dead wrong. And like, we guessed all the 6 we guessed were wrong. And I know a lot about sports.
Oh, wow.
I struck out 100%. If anybody listens, you should
be embarrassed.
Likes football. Like, some of the ones we guessed, just for the record, were like, we guessed Ole Miss. We guessed Penn State. We guessed UCLA. We guessed Alabama. None of those. They were all wrong. Like, those are like some of the biggest programs. It was like Tennessee, Michigan State, Florida. Like, also big programs. But
yeah. There's a lot of big. But I mean, the one good thing about Ole Miss is that at one point the entire school chose and then was rejected by George Lucas for their mascot to be Admiral Akbar.
That's a trap.
Because they're the Ole Miss Rebels.
Yeah.
But that's like a weird connotation version of Rebels. So they're trying to find something more neutral. And Star Wars, you're the Rebel Alliance.
Yeah.
So it worked. And then because it's so ridiculous, it got through. I wore an Admiral Akbar shirt to the game.
Two things. We're doing the thing where we ramble about something no one wants to hear about. So let's move on to magic. But second thing. End of the podcast, just when you said Rebels, reminded me of a really, really fun game that I've been playing on Sundays that's a Star Wars-related football game that you will very much enjoy.
Okay, we'll talk about the end of the podcast.
Yes,
all right, so magic news time. Let's talk about magic news.
We'll do the news, then we'll do all our plugs.
Yeah.
Cool, nice. You were doing that, and I just exposed it.
That's the news. Yeah. All right, so today in magic news, so two really big things happened. One, you did more research on, and I was in this football game, apparently, during this, so I wasn't able to watch as much, but world championships happened.
Yeah, we had like the Team Unified Modern Championships, and it was cool, and Greece won, and they had 3 decks, just like all of the teams, and I watched a lot of this. I must have had an actual full-scale, like, I was so tired, or
maybe
like...
Isn't it tryptophan? What's the chemical in turkey that turns your brain off?
Something. I mean, we had like wine and stuff like that, but nothing crazy. I was in Boston visiting my girlfriend's family. I had met all of them. It was a lot of fun. At some point, I watched hours of this. Between 2 different days, I watched hours of this. And I, like, today, when you were like, what happened? And I was like, oh, there was... Well, I saw this one deck, and like... couldn't piece it together. So looking at the results here, though, I was reminded and saw some very cool stuff. I'm just going to go over the deck choices of the 2 teams in the finals, because otherwise we're going to talk about 24 decks and it's just
a lot.
Take a lot.
I do want to talk about one thing with something to keep in mind with Unified Standard, as using this as kind of results of what the format looks like. Unified Modern or Unified Constructed in general is, you know, the different players couldn't use the same cards in their deck other than basic lands, meaning that, you know, your deck choices for the teams were very specific on making sure people could play powerful decks without eating cards from other decks. So
yeah, it's like what we do in Highlander Roulette, which is actually a lot of fun, where you're choosing, you can't repeat yourself between decks.
Right. But more of the point is, this isn't necessarily that true of what the format looks like. This is what the format looks like if you had to have 2 other players playing with you that you couldn't share any cards between the 3 of you.
Yeah, so we had Belgium lost in the finals to Greece. So the 3 decks chosen by the Belgian players were...
Actually, technically, I think I ate waffles and I had Greek food today.
Yeah.
So, cool.
If, by the way, if anybody listening to this is like... the championships weren't during Thanksgiving. I could be dead wrong, and I could have done this another time. I'm that blacked out on what happened.
Well, the championships could have been the weekend before Thanksgiving.
They might have been. I know that I watched.
I was out of town for both.
I know that I watched a lot of it, is the point.
Okay, let's talk about the next.
Yeah. The Belgian players, we had Jerome Bastogne. He was playing Goreo's Vengeance. So this is a deck we've talked about before. Nothing in the list
here. Was it a Grishel brand, or was it like the Grixis version?
This was the Grishel brand.
Cool.
Yeah.
I actually like the Grishel brand more. It feels more unstoppable.
Well, it definitely feels more unfair.
Yeah.
I mean, just when you remove a World Spine Worm from your hand with Nourishing Shoal and gain 11 life, it's like kind of like one of those, like, I'm doing really unfair things in there.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Like the one thing I would say, right now, it seems like a little bit of a dangerous choice just because of the amount of Dredge Hate out there. Like, I'm running with 3 Surgical Extractions in almost every deck because it just is good against Dredge, but also eats other decks, and
yeah,
this seems like a deck that's really weak to that kind of hate.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it is super glass cannon, and we've said this before. So that was deck number one. Their second deck that they were playing, Seat B, was from Branko Nerink, I think. It's a Naya Burn deck. And again, we have a pretty standard deck here. Looks like it's got 4 Eidolon in a deck with Goblin Guides and Nacatls and stuff. I know Eidolon has jumped in and out of these decks. It started originally as like a straight burn card, and now this is like...
Well, no, so the main thing that's been jumping is Nacatl. Like, Eidolon's kind of been in burn forever. It's Nacatl has been picked up pretty heavily, though. I think it's pretty safely assumed that Nacatl is the card you should be playing in burn.
Yeah, I guess as I'm reading this list here, I'm seeing that it is actually just basically a burn deck with a few other off-color cards. I was thinking more of this was like a zoo deck with Eidolon. This is definitely a burn deck with green and white cards.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, burn's been Naya forever, and they just realized that Nacatl is really good in the deck.
Yeah, 100%. So that's their seat two. You have seat three, Peter Varen. He was playing Infect. There was an Infect deck in both the winning and losing team's set of three. In here, again, you pretty much have the standard set. You have one copy of Viridian Corruptor main deck, which I think is something we've definitely seen here and there. I like Viridian Corruptor. I've always thought that card is unique and cool and interesting. For those that don't remember what that card is, it's green-green 1 for a 2/2 infect. When it enters the battlefield, destroy target artifact.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, it's like one of those...
I played in a bunch of random commander decks, actually, just because having a source of infect damage is just a possible out against some random life gain moment or something like that.
100%. It's like that green-white all-in deck in Highlander has this card in it now, because it's like, this is a great way to kind of get double strike on going all-in and also have a way to get rid of an artifact.
Sure.
So, yeah, otherwise, though, 2 Distortion Strikes, which, again, that's something we've seen go in and out of infect decks for a long time.
Yeah.
I like Distortion Strike.
It's a pretty stock infect list, it feels like.
Yeah, it doesn't have that much. So that was the Belgian lists. I'm going to look at the Greece, the Greek, Grecian, Grecian, Greek, Greek.
It's Greek.
I'm like stupid. Greek I'm a food. Stupid person.
I'm pretty sure we've been calling Greek people Greek for thousands of years.
I just tried to pass off Grecian on the podcast.
Like, I think people have been Greek longer than any other written,
Please don't turn this off. All right, okay, what
decks were they playing?
We have Bill Chronopoulos. Sweet, sweet name. Do you kind of wish your last name was Chronopoulos sometimes?
Never.
It makes me feel like I'm a chronozoa, but...
Okay, what do you play?
All right, Dredge.
It's been really rambly. I apologize to everyone. We've just... All the tryptophan from the turkey is still keep going
and
in our bodies.
And Kessler and I missed each other, so we just like to ramble about stupid things. Yes, he's playing a Dredge list, so yeah, this is... To me, looks pretty much like what I'm used to seeing. 4 Cathartic Reunion, which is like the superpower thing we've gotten sort of recently.
It's like a very stock list. I mean, the interesting thing about Dredge is now just a giant pillar of the format. I mean, it is arguably the most prolific deck. A friend of the cast recently used a concept that's used in machine learning to actually figure out what the diversity of Modern is, and he expected Infect to be the most played deck in the format, but it's really Dredge.
So here's what's really interesting about this. I love, and this is one of the things that I love the most about Modern. Over time, we get super familiar with cards, right? Like, okay, we've all been familiar with Narcomoeba forever because it was a super big card in Legacy Dredge for the longest time, right? Bloodgast showed up in decks for years doing all kinds of different things. Stinkweed Imp. So they print Prized Amalgam, and there's a whole bunch of conversation when they print that card. Like, is this gonna be the thing? Is this gonna be good? It has absolutely, as you've said, turned out to be the card. That's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then you look and you're like, but also there's 4 copies of Insolent Neonate in here, and also there's 4 copies of Cathartic Reunion.
Oh, no, yeah, this deck... Well, Cathartic Reunion wasn't necessary. The Dredge deck was already one of the best decks in the format before...
Cathartic Reunion.
Cathartic Reunion was printed. But obviously Neonite and Prize Amalgam are the reason the deck exists.
Totally. What I'm trying to say is it's interesting to see that the World Championship Dredge list is playing 12 cards printed within the last year. And like
6 months, even.
Really? Is Amalgam
9 months.
No, Amalgam's a little older, right?
Shadows of Innistrad, 9 months.
Yeah. So anyway, without talking about that too much, aside from that, it's playing a lot of things we're used to seeing. So it's a very unfair deck. It's funny that they're playing Dredge and the other guys are playing Grishalbrand. So they both have the kind of like way out the gates, just like go crazy in the first few turns of the game.
Sure.
Can kill you out of nowhere deck. But they're also playing Infect, which is like the much more sort of like turn by turn calculated can kill you out of nowhere deck.
I don't know if I would agree with that statement. I think
really?
Of the six decks, they're both playing two of their three decks are that kind of deck.
Well, I was just going to say, so the next player, Petros Tsiotis, is playing Abzan.
Yeah, so I would say like...
polar opposite of Dredge.
One, the winners, it sounds like, were playing Burn.
No, these are the winners.
Okay, the winners were playing two heavily aggressive Dredge, linear decks and then one control-y deck. And then the other one was playing three linear attack you face decks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Abzan list here, played by Petros, again, this is something we're seeing a lot now. We have three Liliana of the Veil and one Liliana of the Last Hope. It's cool that Liliana of the... I can't say Liliana today. Liliana of the Last Hope is like a thing that's in Modern now, a lot. It's like was a very good card, and it definitely didn't get called as a shot when it first got printed, as this is just going to be in Modern, but it's like all the Abzan, almost all of the Jund lists are playing at least one.
It still surprises me that Abzan decks haven't picked up Grim Flayers as heavily, just because of how powerful that card seems to be with Lingering Souls.
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe it's because just red has better burn spells that kind of get in, like they have Tarfire. Tarfire. That's the goblin.
Yeah.
Tarfire and or the red enchantment that you sack to do 2 damage to a thing. So they have better ways
Seal
to get
fire.
Delirium online,
yeah,
but I don't know. It feels like this is a deck that would make better use of the fact that Grimflayer draws them 3 cards.
It is fascinating that you have a pretty stock Abzan list here, and you know this is not like it's a concession to some degree because you're playing Unified, so like you have to be clever. But I don't really feel like they did this. Well, okay, the Dredge deck. No, but this is the lands. It's the lands. That's the thing you have to pay attention to. I guess what I was going to say was...
But Dredge doesn't... Yeah.
Sure. At this point, because the question I was going to ask was, Abzan versus Jund at this point in Modern, is there just a... I thought that just distinctly Jund was the better deck. It just seemed like at these days, Jund was always the choice. Interesting to see an Abzan deck playing 3 Siege Rhinos, by the way. Like, how many... Was the last time you saw 3 Siege Rhinos or 4 Siege Rhinos in, like, a World Championship or, like, a top 4...
Eldrazi.
Yeah, it's been a while. That card was so ubiquitous for a while. Yeah, anyway, Lingering Souls, obviously, that's the biggest reason you play.
Which Lingering Souls is really good right now. The fact that Infect's the best deck, arguably in the format, makes Lingering Souls extremely important.
It's always been one of the best cards against them.
Right.
One of those like counterintuitive choices when like you think about, you're like, okay, what's the thing that I can do? Okay, it's more targeted spot removal. It's more clever. It's like, no, just a bunch of 1/1 flying blockers is actually the way to win. And then the last deck in here is an Infect deck by, oh my goodness. Do you want to try this one? Wow, you just took the computer from me. I was going to try.
Panagiotis Papadopoulos.
I think it's Panagiotis.
Panagiotis Papadopoulos. I got the second half right.
Papadopoulos?
It's Papadopoulos.
It's like the Doppler on a weather broadcast. yeah, again, here, you still got the 2 Distortion Strikes. Pretty similar. There's no, they don't have the... the 2/2 for 3 that we just talked about. He's not in the main deck.
Slightly different sideboard. Yeah, pretty much stock list. All right, so that's kind of, I mean, World Champions is really cool. I love unified formats in general because it makes you make really cool creative deck decisions. If you go down to the format a little longer, there's some other cool decks. Like there's a Sun and Moon deck, which has been really popular. It was just like kind of a new deck that's been showing up. But yeah, so that was World Championships. Next on news, because we need to keep moving. We got a bunch of Aether Revolts, like spoilers.
Yeah, 4 cards popped up.
I'm not even sure how it came from. I'm not sure if Wizards announced it. What it is it was the game day. It was the poster that announces all of the different promos for Aether Revolt. That's what was spoiled. So there's this big Ajani Mat, so Ajani looks like he's going to be in the set. And then you got, there was a black, I don't know the name of any of these cards, but there's...
I think I actually have them right here.
All right.
Yeah, we have Yahini's expertise. You know Yahini?
I know who she is. Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Or she. I think it's a she. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I didn't read the story. It came out, I think, today about what that character is, but they are a vampire aetherborn.
Oh, sweet.
Which is sweet. I don't know what their powers are. I don't know what the deal is, but that's all I know. But this spell is really, really, really sick.
Unreal. It's a sorcery, black, 2. All creatures get -3/-3 until end of turn. You may cast a card with converted mana cost 3 or less from your hand without paying its mana cost. This opens up a lot of things. So you have the suspend cards from Time Spiral Block that don't officially have a casting
cost.
That's
the big one. So the ones that pay attention to there's the white one, which is Restore Balance, which means that there is now a 4-mana balance in the format.
Yep.
There's the red one, which is Wheel of Fortune.
There's the blue one, which is Ancestral Visions, which is probably the simplest one to play, because it's
the one that will happen first. This will be slotted right into Grixis decks because it does so many powerful things with that deck already, and just kind of does what Anger the Gods does.
Oh my God! Like four mana, -3/-3, draw 3.
Yeah, and that's not Magical Christmas Land, but like you also have 3 damage to all creatures plus Colgan's Command.
Yeah.
Or you have 3 damage to all creatures plus Liliana the Veil gets put into play. Like there's so many different. Here's, sweet options with this card.
Here's the question. You draw your opening hand, you have Ancestral Visions. You play Yahini's Expertise on turn 4, hoping you're going to be able to... They counter it, and you didn't cast your Ancestral Vision on turn 1.
Well, no, you always cast it on turn 1. It's for when you draw it later.
That's the noob play where you're like, ah.
The bad one is Restore Balance, where you had the option to... Because Restore Balance is like a huge, really long availability, so that them countering it really locks it into your hand.
Yeah.
Versus Ancestral Visions, which is a little bit more feasible. The other ones are the green one, which is
Hypergenesis,
which is banned.
Yeah, Hypergenesis is banned,
and then the black one, which is Living End,
Yeah,
and that'll I can see this being seeing play in Living End decks of the sideboard as just a like another option if they get a Living End stuck in their hand.
I think there's actually keep talking about this for a second, but I think there's actually a couple others that don't get a lot of discussion.
I thought it was a cycle. I didn't think there was more than just 5 free.
I might be thinking of the other suspend cards that actually have casting costs and they have like an alternative cost in the suspend.
I think when you think of the ones that are like they have a huge casting costs, and then there's the X spell suspend ones.
Yeah, maybe because I was thinking of what's it called? The black one.
The black
Curse
one
of
that,
the Cabal.
Yeah, that is a huge cost. It's
not
free.
Oh, got it. Okay, I'm looking at all these. Yeah, Curse of the Cabal has a 10, Greater Gargadon. Yeah, you're right. So it is just that cycle. It is just that cycle of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then you also have Lotus Bloom, which is the last one.
Which is the artifact, which is Black Lotus. So this can cast the Black Lotus. It's a 4-mana Black Lotus, which is still really good. Like, there's a reason that most... Yeah. Card's amazing. And that's just the free spells. And we were talking about a little bit with Grixis, where they have all of these other cards available
to
them.
Yeah, like this into Kolaghan's Command is like pretty sick.
Right. Or like even like this into Lingering Souls. Like there are so many 3-mana or below spells that like Esper decks playing this seems sweet. Jund decks playing this. Like,
I mean, just the idea of, okay, you cast this on turn 4, you destroy all creatures, you make them discard a card, and then you get back your best creature that you just killed with the other half of Kolaghan's Command. Like, that seems like, oh my God, the value is crazy.
You know, the reason people generally have a problem with, like, -2/-3 doesn't kill everything. There's a bunch of X4s in the format because Lightning Bolt proof, but then you can cast the Kolaghan's Command to kill the thing that was just above. Like, this can kill a Tarmogoyf theoretically with a Kolaghan's Command or a Lightning Bolt. So, like, definitely this is going to be a. Seems like it's just a shoe-in for Modern.
Just seems like a really powerful card. I mean, this is just one of those... It is a little bit one of those cards like when Cavern of Souls got printed and people were like... It kind of feels like the last part just got slapped on.
It definitely did.
Uncounterable
part.
And this is one of those things where you look and you're like... Obviously, Languish is 4-mana -4/-4. So if you can't make 4-mana -3/-3, it's like just strictly worse in a recent printing. But the relationship between the two effects is a little strange because it's like
there's a lot of threes in there. There's 3 threes.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's very cool. Yeah. It's just it doesn't have like the sort of like the flavor where I'm like, oh yeah, this represents that thing. It's like it's just a really powerful, valuable 4-drop that has lots of value.
It's the best.
Yeah, cool. The second card we have is Trophy Mage,
this first card was sweet. This might be a favorite. So Trophy Mage is very similar to Trinket Mage and Treasure Mage, where
the middle of the pack.
It's a 2/2 for 3, 1 blue and 2 colorless. Yep. Enters the battlefield, and you may search your deck for a 3-mana artifact.
Yeah, so there's a couple things.
It's a human wizard?
Yep, human wizard. So there's a few things here, guys. Anybody who has ever messed around with like a Grand Architect deck or like some like base blue mid-rangey deck, whether it was in Standard or in Modern, knows it's very, very fun to play these Trinket Mage, Treasure Mage type of effects. There's a lot of versatility to it. They fit into sort of like Tezzeret decks. We're yet to get to that point where there's that kind of like top tier grindy artifact deck in Modern.
Trinket Mage is always, like, Treasure Mage is never going to really see play. I mean, like, the reasons you need to search for a Wurmcoil engine are generally just you should just play more Wurmcoil engines.
Yeah.
And there's not, like, the reason you want a toolbox card is you want to be able to find these, or what was the new, a treasure chest? What was, we decided no longer saying toolbox, we're saying treasure box or whatever. All right, moving on. That was like 2 weeks ago. You don't remember that?
Did I black out?
Yeah, maybe. So Treasure Mage isn't going to always be a big deal, at least not right now. The Trinket Mage side has always been fringe playable in Modern in every format in the history of Magic that's
and
been
guaranteed
legal in.
Playable in all Kessler decks.
Yeah, I've definitely played with it multiple times, taking it at least two different GPs and multiple PTQs. But beyond that, you know, one mana artifacts are great for hate cards. That's what this. What's interesting to me about this is, this is the closest thing to Stoneforge Mystic we have in the format. This can find sort of Feast of Famine. And yes, Batterskull was the thing that made Cobblade just way too insane. But, like, people forget that deck dominated Standard for 4 months or 3 months before Batterskull was ever legal in the format.
Yeah, I mean, that was to some degree, they're saying that Trophy Mage is basically Stoneforge Mystic is saying, like, yeah, Sleight of Hand is basically Ancestral Recall. It's like, It's basically Brainstorm.
I don't think it's that different. I do think it's like saying that Serum Visions is basically
Ponder.
It's
more like saying Sleight of Hand is basically Brainstorm. I mean, it's like eons of difference, but I hear what you're saying. So the other side...
Well, because the thing with swords that suck is playing four of them is bad.
Yeah, of course.
And every other equipment tutor in the format that's existed so far has been not attached to a creature or has some other trigger effect that doesn't really work or is expensive. This, for 3 mana for a 2/2, that's pretty good value. You get that sword, is like still very good. You can play 4 of these, play that, and then just play 2 hate cards, hate 3-drop artifact cards like Bridge from Below.
Ensnaring Bridge.
Well,
yeah, we were just talking about before we started recording some of the ones that come to mind. So Ensnaring Bridge is the most obvious played 3-mana hate card right now in Modern. That's heavily played. Oblivion Stone is a card that shows up. Yep. That's an interesting one you can get.
Dampening Matrix, if you want to get rid of all them artifacts.
Dampening Matrix, yep. Crucible of Worlds is one of those cards where you play it in decks, but you don't want to play that many of them.
Well, the thing with Crucible of Worlds I was thinking is, with this, your Tron matchup for blue decks becomes much better because you can just play 2 to 4 Ghost Quarters,
yeah,
and then have this in the sideboard and then just bring it against Tron, search it up, and now every Ghost Quarter is, you can now just strip mine Tron decks out of the format. Like, there's so many cool little tricks you can do with this card. Obviously it's not Stoneforge Mystic,
right? Yeah.
But Stoneforge Mystic is banned currently, and this gets a lot of this does a lot of very similar things and could do those things in Modern.
This does a lot of really cool things, even like Trinisphere. I mean, there's Shackles. There's a lot of really, really, really interesting cards that exist in Modern that you don't want to play that many of, that if we do start to get closer to that mid-rangey Tezzeret-style deck, this is a card that you could easily see yourself playing. Because I've done the same thing you've done with Trinket Mage. There's a few of them, right? Engineered Explosives, obviously. And, we've all done the thing where we're like, well, a removal spell, you're like, oh, I guess I could play Brittle Effigy. You're like, that seems okay. Ugh. But, like...
Three is a lot more powerful. And there are more 1-drops than 0-drops, obviously, the fact that there's 2, it's just there are more 1-drops in Magic, that are especially in Artifact Land. So, like, there is that difference. But the power level on some of these 3-drops is just so much more. And right now, the format's really weak to, like, Abrupt Decay isn't that good right now. The Dredge is, Dredge is a bad matchup for Jund. Like, the reason Infect is so good at the moment is because Jeskai decks and Jund decks aren't seeing a ton of play because the rest of the format is hostile to them, which makes a deck like this a little bit more feasible. I'm really excited.
Yeah, this card's great. So let's cover the last two. They're a little less exciting. I think those first two are definitely the big ones. The third one is called Quicksmith Rebel. It's red and 3 for a 3/2 human artificer. Love the subtype artificer, by the way. there's a lot of them. When Quicksmith Rebel enters the battlefield, target artifact you control gains tap. This artifact deals 2 damage to target creature or player for as long as you control Quicksmith Rebel. This is pretty cool if you're playing some sort of like...
Oh, it's a sweet card. I mean, it's not good in Modern, but
yeah,
as like a cool...
Because it costs 4. If it was a 3-mana 2/1 that did the exact same thing, it would be like the fringe discussion playable. 4-mana 3/2 is just like...
It's 4 mana, it doesn't kill a person. to other 4-mana spells.
It does give you something cool, which is that it's a 4-mana card that represents the ability to do something when it comes down. Because, like, okay, let's
yeah,
just...
Yeah, but it's like, Look at other 4-mana spells in the format.
Agreed. I'm not saying this is like good, and I'm not saying this is playable.
If it was a 1/4 that did this, I'd actually be more interested.
I'm not going to rule this out right away. This comes into play, enters the battlefield, trigger on the stack, Spellskite, already in play. You can redirect the lightning bolt they try to kill it with to the Spellskite. Now your Spellskite taps to shock for the rest of the game. That seems pretty cool. I mean,
it's cool. I'm not saying this card isn't cool. I'm saying that it's not good for modern.
Agreed. You can't write
off. I do love the idea of like, oh, you're Darkstealing it, doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
Let me see you for a second. And then you're like, the guy, the artificer makes it into a thing that does stuff.
Also, he's like,
a cool guy. I like the guy.
This with Darksteel Citadel seems cool.
Yeah. All right. So next card.
Scrap. Guys, if you're listening and you think this card's much cooler than Kessler does, you tweet at me.
Don't you dare.
last one we have here that's been revealed is Scrap Trawler. This is a 3-mana artifact creature construct. It's a 3/2. When Scrap Trawler or another artifact you control is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, return to your hand target artifact card from your graveyard with lesser converted mana cost. You can get an artifact with 2 or less from your graveyard to your hand. True story, guys. Kessler called me today. He's like, there's a spoiler. It's a 3-mana artifact. When any artifact goes to your graveyard, you can return another artifact with the same converted mana cost directly to play. I was like, wow, that sounds insane. He was like, yeah, it sounds pretty sick, right? I was like,
that's definitely not that card.
Turns out it's a 3/2 creature that specifies less than and to your hand.
Yeah, Still pretty good. The creature part of that doesn't matter to me as much as the fact that the other half of the text doesn't work the same way. But yeah, no, I mean, it's a cool card. I like the design. I do think there's eventually going to be a deck that's all about sacrificing artifacts and getting value on it, and maybe this could be a piece of that deck.
Greater Gurgadon with Wellsprings? Is that the deck you're talking
about? No, not that deck. All right, so that's it for the spoilers that we saw. Ajani's showing up, it looks like.
I'm so stoked that we're in the middle of this artifact cycle. It's really fun. Sweet.
All right, so next. Now we're on the subject matter, but before we get into the subject matter of the podcast, let's talk about how you can find us.
Let's talk about Squarespace. Just kidding. Let's. I listen to too many podcasts. Let's talk about
MailChimp.
So, guys, we're on Twitter. If you want to follow along with the conversation and you want to share your thoughts about how sweet of a card Quicksmith Rebel is, you can tweet at us. I'm Ben Bateman Media. This is Kes Wiley, and the podcast is at the MMCast.
Yeah, we're like 6 followers away from 2,700 followers.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I would love to get to 3,000 by the end of the year.
That'd be sweet.
Yeah, we only have a month left,
I don't
though.
Think that's likely.
No.
We'd have to like become famous.
Yeah.
Make us famous, everybody. All right, so beyond that, please check out the Patreon. We announced last week that there are going to be some changes, but starting in January, there'll be a cool swag box that works a little bit differently where we just give you cool content that we think you'd like, be it a deck box from a new company, be it cool ties, so you know, something that we think you'd like as Magic players.
Yeah, it's a little bit less. It's a little bit less Masters of Modern brand specific, and a little bit more Masters of Modern lifestyle, the way we live, and things we like, and things we think our listeners would like, and that's what it's going to be about. So, if you guys like that idea and you want to get on board with it, that is Patreon.com/TheMMCast.
Right. Beyond that, follow the YouTube channel. That's the next most important one. Make sure to check out our YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/topdeckingtv. There you can see YouTube version of this. There'll be deck lists. If you don't know the cards we're talking about, images will pop up to show you what the cards look like. Mike Clary does that for us. Sometimes he throws in funny little things making fun of us in the video. It's good.
Yeah, definitely.
Go watch and subscribe. You
can currently find the audio on collected.company. That's where we are now. He's been rocketjump.com. We have Jimmy and Josh who do also their content on collected.company, and they have their own YouTube channel, and that is the Command Zones Commander podcast. It's awesome. It's great content.
Yep. Right now they've been doing these cool battle videos where they're fighting with different of the new decks. It's really cool. Definitely check them out.
And stay tuned, guys, because on the subject of video, we have like a really, really cool announcement that we'll elaborate on soon, and we don't have the details put out there yet, but we have teased it for a while, and it's finally getting close to fruition, so it's going to be real, real cool. We can't wait to share it with you guys. Let's talk about today's subject. Oh, wait, last thing. I wanted to just shout out a big thank you to Star City Games. They featured us in their news show that they do on YouTube, and it was so cool. We got tagged on Twitter, and I was like, wow, people listen to this show. That's amazing. I was like, I can't believe this. Somebody knows that we do this podcast. So
yay, and that's thanks to you guys. We appreciate it. Like our song from last week. All right. subject of the matter is we are going to be talking about the format Frontier and kind of what it means. So for those who don't know, the Japanese store and kind of merchandise creator, Haruya, I think I'm saying that correctly, created the format from Tier. It starts in the set M15. It's an eternal format or a non-rotating format that currently is a lot of just the last kind of big decks from the last 5 years. They created it for a few reasons, but you know, like other formats, like Eternal, like other ones, it kind of has picked up more steam than those other made-up formats. Now Toronto has been adding it to some of their big tournaments out there. It's becoming part of side events. It's kind of a format that's picking up steam. And we kind of want to talk about this alongside a couple other pieces of information and kind of show where Magic is right now.
Yeah, so let's just quickly talk about, just because people might be a little bit unclear about exactly how far back this does go. So let's count backwards on the sets. And correct me if I'm wrong here, because M15, I get a little hazy. But M15
is the Garrick. The Garrick set.
So I'm going to count backwards. You tell me when to stop. We have Kaladesh. Okay?
Yep.
We have Shadows of Innistrad, Eldritch Moon. We have...
Not in that order, but yes.
We have Battle for Zendikar, Oath of the Gatewatch.
Okay, we're going to go that way. Yeah. Yes, correct.
We have Khans of Tarkir, Fate Reforged, Dragons of Tarkir.
Correct.
And before that, do we include any of Theros, Born of the Gods, or Journey in the Nyx? We do, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you have Magic Origins, then you have Theros, Born of the Gods, Journey in the Nyx.
And then it cuts off?
Yeah.
Okay, you're positive about that?
Oh, sorry, no. You don't have Theros.
That's what I thought.
You don't have Theros. Block. That's what I thought. You're correct.
Yeah, I think it's M15 Origins.
Theros, M15, Khans, Origins, Battle for Zendikar,
Shadows,
Kaladesh.
That makes more sense.
Yeah.
That makes more sense. So yeah, it is kind of like an amalgamation of what old overextended.
It's like the last three standards combined. It's the
new extended. Overextended was the Gavinberry format. New extended was the one where they took extended and they shortened it, and it was like 4 years basically.
And this is important for today's conversation actually, to kind of explain what rotating formats used to be. So before modern, the precursor to modern was the format that kind of Wizards wanted to be where standard cards would rotate into was extended.
And they worked on this for a long time. Right. Extended, and there was many versions, and it never caught on as an actual loved format.
It started out as 8 years back,
yeah.
I believe. And then they shortened it into 4 years back. So instead of standard, which was two, it was four. And kind of, you know, there are different reasons it was unpopular. With the 4 year, one of the big reasons was people don't want to play the same decks they were playing in standard. Like, it was also right after a period where we had like a big bad 4 years in a row. So like, it was literally Fairies into Jund, into Cobblade,
yeah.
Or into Valakut, into Cobblade, into Delver. And it was just like, only those decks were like the big ones with a few side examples.
Which is why there was a pretty restrictive banned list that Modern was launched with originally. That banned list was basically trying to take out the key card to most of those popular standard decks. That's why Bitter Blossom was originally on the banned list.
Right.
That's why Valakut was originally on the banned list.
Right.
A lot of those big decks. I mean, that's why we don't have Stoneforge
Dredge
Mystic.
Cards, yeah.
That's why we don't have Jace. It's why we didn't have Grave Troll. A lot of these things have been unbanned, and Modern has become a very cool format because of it, but it's taken 5 years.
Right. But, you know, that was one of the big reasons with just new extended. But the problem with a rotating eternal format is, I guess, a longer term format than standard, is the older you get, the more likely cards are going to be expensive, just from a scarcity perspective. And when people are investing $60 into Goyf, which was the problem with original extended, and that was going to rotate, it became very unpopular and people would only play it during the PTQ season that you had to play it. So it became this kind of unpopular format. Modern allows people to invest, by being a non-rotating format, it allows players to invest in a set in a way that they're not going to be, you know, it doesn't rotate ever again. If I spend $120 on a Tarmogoyf right now, I'm never going to have to worry, excluding bannings, that Tarmogoyf is not going to be playable.
So if the first set that was released, this goes back to M15, so this is basically 2.5 or so years of cards, correct? Is that what I'm getting? We're about to enter 2017?
It's about three.
Okay, so about 3 years of cards. Now, I think the reason this exists, and stop me here if I'm wrong, because I saw there was a very long conversation that happened on our Twitter over the last couple days,
mm-hmm.
and I was checking in, but this is one of those ones where my phone was buzzing like every 10 seconds, and it was clearly that you were agitated.
I wasn't agitated. It was a very healthy conversation.
Not in an angry way, but in like a your fingers were moving incredibly fast way, and there was no way I was going to be able to read this conversation until it was done.
Sure, maybe.
Because we both get the same stupid alerts from the Twitter. I saw this happening, and I was kind of loosely paying attention. But Modern, when it started, only went back to 03, and it was launched in 2010, I think, 2011, which means you only had, at that point, 7 or 8 years of cards. At this point, we're now looking at 13, 14 years of cards, right? So it's literally almost doubled in the time that since they announced and launched the format. We're getting close to double the amount of cards being legal. It's doubled the amount of standard decks. It's doubled the amount of everything. So it is a much, much more vast, expensive, and sought-after format now than it was when it launched, which means Frontier, if it's 3 years of cards, is a lot closer to where Modern was when Modern started in the first place. And I can see where people are thinking, like, Modern no longer represents this whole, like, it's a way for me to keep my standard cards. Most players that are getting into Modern now are like, I had nothing to do with any of the sets or any of the level of competition in any of the first decade of these sets. Like, unless you guys reprint them, I'm going to have no ability to get these cards for reasonable prices because I wasn't even aware Magic existed at that time.
So I think there's a little bit of that. I do think part of the problem here is that Modern is expensive. Though, I mean, if you look at reprints of the last year, they're getting better at kind of printing cards into the format. So yes, these players didn't play during these blocks, but they played Eternal Masters or they played Modern Masters 1 and 2. And so these cards are getting put into their hands. I think the bigger issue here is Magic isn't growing like it used to. Magic, during our period when we started playing this game and when Modern first started showing up, 20% growth every year. That yeah. means that's 20% new players added to Magic that go through the classic Magic cycle of play, which is you start out, you draft a little bit at your store, you start building a little bit of a collection, you buy some intro decks, you start trading some people, you build your first standard deck, and it's just made out of kind of the jank out of your standard deck. Then you're like, oh, I have the bug. I'm going to start building a more competitive standard deck, trading for more expensive cards, spending more money. And then once you get to the next year, you're like, oh, I have all the cards you need to actually build a standard deck because now I have all the old cards from last set and the new set. I have a standard deck. And then you hit your first rotation. And you're like, oh, crap, all that money I spent on these cards is now just gone. I don't want to invest too much into this new standard because
I'm going to lose money.
So you start thinking, okay, look, let me look at Modern, and you can then invest into Modern. And that's kind of what the classic play pattern was. And, you know, part of that conversation on Twitter was Magic still prints cards that are good in Modern. Like, if you invested in the Eldrazi cards in Standard right now, those will be good in Modern for a very long time. If you invested in Collected Company, if you invested in Colgan's Command, like, every set for the last four sets has introduced many powerful cards into Modern. So it's not like those cards won't cycle into that, but Modern is still expensive. There are all the other cards you don't have access to.
Right.
And Standard started rotating on top of the fact that now, sorry, I jumped ahead a little bit. We have this aging population. So Magic's population is no longer growing at the same rate. We no longer have 20% being added.
Do you know that for a fact?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Wizard, like I mean, we've had decent growth this last year, but there was it's no longer growing at that 20% rate. It's plateaued a little bit. It's not perfectly plateaued, so it's still growing.
So we're probably safely around that estimated 30 million we were at for a long time, or short of. We're probably
It's not skyrocketing anymore.
Got it.
And because of that, Magic's population is now aging past Standard. You no longer have people entering that phase, or the same amount of people. So, like, FNM
at a higher rate than the new players are occupying Standard.
Correct. Yeah. So, like, FNM is their numbers are hurting a little bit. I think that's for a few reasons, but I think one of the reasons is that their aging population is going down, and Standard and Draft are the main formats of FNM.
Right.
So that's an issue. The other issue you have here is Standard's hyper rotation of the last 2 years. So over the last 2 years, Standard rotated at, you know, 25% faster than it used to.
With the new system they've now
that they went back on. They have now fixed this. But because of that, people were even less willing to invest in the Standard, especially for part of that. There was a point where there were $100 Jace Fringe Prodigies, which were a bad investment. I mean, right now, Jace Fringe Prodigies is not worth $100 anymore.
It's like 40 bucks now?
Yeah, so that
so bummed.
So that's, you know, when you're looking at that kind of period of time, people became very weary of Standard. And you still have the problem that these players aren't necessarily jumping onto the Modern train because it's expensive, because they have all these standard cards, and most of these standard cards don't rotate in the Modern. No one's playing Mantis Rider in Modern right now.
Right.
In comes Haruya, which, you know, my personal theory is that they kind of created this format partly because they had a bunch of Siege Rhinos and Mantis Riders in their collection. They wanted to sell them, created this new format.
Yeah, it's smart.
They're pretty influential, so they're able to kind of build steam behind it, but there's a huge player base that's looking for a place to take their money, their cards that have rotated Standard, and still play with them. And this is kind of offering it to them. And kind of with the same death of Legacy, Modern is moving more into what Legacy used to be.
Yep.
And every 10 years, if we were to add a new format to Magic, I can see people wanting to kind of jump on that train.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, that's kind of essentially, like you said, it's partly what I was saying in the beginning. And I think what you're saying is that because so much time has passed, now Modern does occupy so much more of the space that Legacy once did. It's only going to continue to do that more and more.
Which is why Modern's growing. I think it's kind of each venue is pulling a little bit of the players that were in the previous position. Legacy players are moving into Modern.
Yep.
Because Legacy is not being supported anymore. And if you want to play Eternal format, Modern is kind of the main game in town unless you're on Modo.
Yeah.
And in a Modo, you play Vintage because Black Lotus is an available card. And while Modern players is pulling from Legacy, and they're still getting, like, Modern is growing, and that's because we're still getting a chunk of players coming from Standard.
Right.
But because Magic's population is aging faster, and when I say aging, I don't mean physically aging. I mean aging on their Magic cycle.
Right.
They're faster than they used to, the youth of Magic doesn't exist at the same levels. There needs to be some kind of middle ground between these two kind of extremes.
Right.
Which is maybe Frontier.
Yeah, I don't know. I have a hard time believing that long-term Frontier is something that is going to be sort of like revolutionized or be like super, super interesting. I think it's a cool like sort of holdover format for people that want to try something new. I think all the reasons that you're talking about are great, players do want to use their cards, and we're hitting that cycle of rotation from a couple years ago where all these new players were coming into the game. Now things are slower. So I see all that and I get all that. But I'm looking at the decks here, like I have the metagame pulled up here in front of me, and I'm just sort of like, this is all the reasons that I didn't love Extended, was because I don't really need to see, you know, another four color rally format. Like, I don't necessarily need to see, you know what I'm saying? It's not a bad thing. It's just that like, I felt like I pay attention to the tournaments and I play some Standard here and there. And all the complaints people had of Modern, the reason that ban list was so intense when it first got launched, are the same things I have here. Right. Like, that's kind of how I feel about it.
Well, but that's also temporary. I mean, that's partly because it just exists. The difference between this and Extended, or old Extended, or new Extended, sorry, this and new Extended, was new Extended was always going to have that problem. There was never going to be a period in new Extended's life where it wasn't just going to be the last 4 years worth of Standard decks fighting it out. Versus this, because it's an eternal format, or because it's a non-rotating format, A, you can invest in this format and you're not wasting your money unless it just dies, it doesn't become popular, which right now not popular enough where that if it's popular enough where your cards are going to be expensive,
right,
then the investment's going to be fine. But more importantly, this is a format that will grow. I mean, like, the in both player base and in size, like, soon Amaket will be added, and then after that blah 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 will be added. But this is one of the only competitive formats where you can currently play Dig Through Time,
which is sweet. And Treasure Cruise
and
yeah all of the Eldrazi cards and all of the good things, except for Ivoga, you can't play.
Sure. And what's interesting about it is it's a format that exists where these powerful effects aren't broken. It's small enough where you don't have as many of the combinations that you do with older mechanics that didn't really work together. It's part of this, you know, the new world order. Most of these sets have existed in a timeline where they knew they were going to do... And in fact, every set here existed in a timeline where they had two sets. They knew that the new set rotation was going to be what's going to happen. That we're going to have two sets a year. Even Khanza Tarkir block had a weird mini effect of dragons into this, you know, with dragons where it was kind of a proto version of the two set block system.
Right. Yeah. I look at all these decks and they're sweet. Like, I can see, because that's the thing is that, again, we're talking about all of these opinions of Extended and new Extended and Modern and being around when it was formed and all the reform we've seen over the last 5 and 6 years. But that doesn't speak to the Standard player who started playing 18 months ago and sees a new format that allows them to use their cards longer.
Right.
Which is a completely different experience. They don't need a banned list. They liked their Standard deck. It's cool they're going to get to play against new Standard decks with their Standard deck.
And cards will need to be banned. I mean, like, even in Block, cards have been banned.
Yep.
So, like, there will be banned cards in Frontier. That's never not going to last. But it is a format that newer players can cycle into. And with the hyper rotation of Standard, it allows them to kind of keep their cards specifically for a set and invest in the Standard, because right now the cards they listed, like, there are Modern cards in Standard,
right,
but to have a Standard deck that's expensive, most of those cards aren't going to be expensive afterwards.
What do you think it means for the Magic economy? Is it a positive or a negative?
I think it's positive. That's kind of what I'm saying. Is now I can invest in a standard deck. Now I can buy my playset of Gideons and Avacyns if I want to play Blue-White Flash, knowing that neither of those cards are going to see any modern play in the near future, because if I want to play Frontier, those cards will cycle into Frontier pretty seamlessly.
Interesting. And this is assuming that Frontier is picking up steam, though we don't know. Has Wizards acknowledged it publicly yet? Have they acknowledged it on the site and talked about it?
No.
It hasn't. This is all...
I mean, like, it is growing. Imagine MTG Goldfish, we're literally looking at it right now, has started tracking Frontier as a metagame.
Yeah.
There was a tournament, you know, FTF, Sunday Showdown. Like, there's, like, minimal events, but it is growing.
It looks like face-to-face games, right?
Yeah, face-to-face games and Haruya are the two ones that mainly have had events so far. But... obviously, it's a new format. Obviously, it's going to be doing things. But there's cool decks here, and there's cool decks here that didn't exist before in those standards. And that's kind of how this will exist. There were sets. Like, you know, the Scapeshift decks were the overextended, or the new extended, sorry, version of Valakut decks that were really cool. So there'll be new things that kind of get played always. It'll be interesting to see how it evolves.
Yeah, for sure. Cool.
Anything else before we jump on to the end?
I'm looking at your notes here. Great notes, by the way. You have like tons of them. I like that one of your notes is people like playing Magic.
Oh yeah. Oh, so that's the last piece. I did not bring that up. It's one of the reasons people might play Frontier. It's the same reason you play Highlander Roulette and Modern, and I have literally a deck for Legacy, Popper, Modern.
You have a Popper
Standard
deck?
Yeah, it's not good. We don't want to talk about it. It's bad dredge. I think there's even a good dredge in the format. Mine's not. Popper, Standard, 6 Highlander decks, plus a second wheel built on my phone, yeah, plus X amount of Modern decks, plus the Gauntlet Modern decks, plus 10 EDH decks. I like playing Magic.
Yeah.
I'll pretty much play Magic any opportunity I want. And my problem with Standard has always been, or especially in the last 2-3 years, I can't afford to keep up with Standard.
Yeah.
And this allows me to kind of play in the same place as Standard of like, oh, I get to take these new cards that we do our top 10 list for, and only 3 of those cards in our top 10 list actually see play in Modern. 10 of those cards will see play in Frontier. So it does offer that opportunity.
And there is that cool thing too, and this is probably the part of it that appeals to me the very most, and it's the same thing that appealed to me in the beginning with Modern, which was great, because back in the beginning with Modern, it was a larger ban list than a smaller card pool. The idea of just a 4-drop being unplayable wasn't the way it is now. Right when it was announced, it was like you could experiment. So I look at, like, for instance, the 4 spoilers we just mentioned, and I'm thinking about Quicksmith Rebel, and I'm like, that's a cool card. It's not powerful enough, but it's a cool card. And then I'm like, but there's probably a way to play Quicksmith Rebel in Modern, or in Frontier. There's probably a way to, when that card comes out, to make that card sweet for Frontier. And that's probably going to be the case with a lot of cards.
I don't know if I would use the word probably, but but I would say you have a must... I would say you would have a much higher chance, other than the fact that there are more artifacts in Modern, but that's a different conversation.
Yeah, anyway,
that card specifically is wonky, but yeah, that's kind of the point. Like, it's another format that the world is open to, and I'll play Magic. Give me an opportunity, I'll do it.
Yeah.
So this is another opportunity. It's a new cool way. It's a way I can just build a Frontier deck and then have it in my backpack, and then have it available whenever other people want to play.
Well, they've also struggled, I know, with the FNM format, as you mentioned recently, with the numbers. And Modern has really struggled to be an FNM format as long as the stores I've known have like been able to sanction it. They just haven't. It hasn't been a thing that's ever picked up at my local store. I do wonder, what if Frontier picked up? Would we start playing Frontier on Fridays sometimes? Like, maybe, if there was a large number of people that wanted to play it, and we could play with sweeter, older cards.
That's purely dependent on size. I think part of the FNM issue is also, as Magic's player base is aging, and this is more in the actual term, like, we're all getting a little bit older, Friday nights are a little less designated towards Magic time.
Right.
You're no longer in college. You're no longer mid-20s. You know, you go out, you have a girlfriend, you have a wife, you have a kid, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Friday night is no longer really a time you can set aside to play Magic. So Friday night Magic as an institution might be lessening in general.
Yeah, I would agree. Without jumping too far down that one, I think that's pretty accurate.
All right. So that's pretty much it on my end. For the episode, any other notes on Frontier? Any decks on this list? I guess we could talk about the different decks. So right now, the main ones, there's Jeskai.
Yep.
Classic Jeskai with Monastery, Swift Spear, Mantis Rider, Mono Red playing Rabble Masters, Bant Eldrazi, Espers playing Dig Through Time, you know, all the good stuff. There's the multi-control, color control, 4-color rally back from Jace Standard. Yep. when all the lands existed. There are multiple Bant Company decks, White-Green Company. There's an Abzan. There's a Jund deck. I mean, there's like kind of a large amount of decks here, probably because this format isn't solved. Ooh, I'm excited that there's a Grixis and Soul deck.
Yeah, I also saw there was like an Ensoul aggro deck above there as well.
Ooh, this deck's sweet.
Yeah.
Chief Engineer, triple Chief Engineer, two Jacerin's Prodigy. Oh, man, I want to play this deck so bad. All right, so two Scuttling Doom Engines. Oh, man.
Let's get on
the Frontier trend. Okay. So, yeah, that's it on my end. Anything else? Oh, you want to talk about, there was some football stars thing on our last segment of the podcast that we do once in a while. It's okay. Non-magic stuff.
I promise you guys this will be somewhat entertaining because it's stupid and funny. So on Sundays, I do a job with DirecTV Audience Network. I work for a show called Fantasy Zone. If you watch Red Zone ever, it's the sister show. It's the next channel. I work on both. So anyway, me and the guy that does the voice and the producer are all big Star Wars fans. We all love Star Wars, and we all love like stupid comic books and
nerds.
Whatever, huge nerds. Like the conversations that we have when the mic's not on are basically like about old episodes of The Simpsons and Star Wars. And so, at one point, once the player in the NFL's name Quincy Enunwa came up, and we started having the conversation, is Enunwa a Star Wars name? Like,
yeah, definitely
Quincy Enunwa, and then it was like Darth Enunwa. And then we started talking about, okay, like we started to keep our eyes open for what are like the, you know, what's the starting 11 players that have Star Wars names in the NFL. And we got pretty far on the list. And I got to say, as a Star Wars fan, Kessler, so I'm going to throw you a couple and you tell me as a Star Wars expert, do you think these names are legit or not legit for the Star Wars universe? And if you have
it further, I'll even tell you if they're good guys or bad guys.
Okay. And then if you have a question and I need to defend it, I'll tell you, I've come up with characters for a lot of these.
All right.
Okay. Aqib Talib.
Yes. I would say they're the neutral party. Like they're more of like a bounty hunter kind of alien.
You think Aqib
Talib's
a bounty hunter?
Yeah. I don't know necessarily. Like he's a Jabba Palace kind
of
guy.
I thought Aqib Talib was probably a member of the Jedi Council. That's what that
I can see that as well.
He's essentially Mace Windu.
He's definitely an alien.
He's basically Mace Windu. That's like what.
No, I'm imagining. So there's this. Oh, I don't know his name. There's like this big. He's got like a snake tail kind of thing coming on. And he's like got a big Fu Manchu kind of beard.
Okay. My personal favorites ever, I'll save for the last two.
Okay.
I'll throw you a couple others. Leonte Carew, this is one of my favorites.
Definitely, but he's like a young kind of cadet, either pilot or Jedi.
Okay, Leonte Carew was my Lando Calrissian. I thought that he like watched over Bespin. Like,
okay.
I figured.
all right.
Okay, Cody Sensabaugh, and that's C-O-T-Y, Cody Sensabaugh.
Okay, so definitely an alien. Definitely his first name is not his actual first name. That's just what he has shortened it to because it's like 10,000 syllables and you couldn't actually tell anyone it.
Sure.
And I'm going to go with Pilot because that's kind of a vague.
I liked Pilot. Cody Sensabaugh to me is a woman and she was an Empire pilot, like a rebellious Empire pilot who likes, she falls in love with feared rebel.
you come up with way longer plot lines for all these people. Okay.
Dak Prescott. His name's Dak.
Yeah. His name is Dak.
Dak Prescott's my Han Solo, basically, and the way I figured is Dak Prescott goes to like infiltrate like the Death Star, and Cody Sensabaugh.
Are these all football players?
Yeah, they're all football players. Sweet, right?
Yeah.
And Cody Sensabaugh is like the rebellious rebel, and she falls for Dak, and they steal the plans, and they elope, and they like fly off in a TIE fighter or something like that. Anyway,
only one person can run a TIE fighter.
I'm gonna keep going.
Make it a B-wing.
Yeah.
They have two seats.
People have turned off the podcast.
No. They love this. Come on. Need more football players.
There's some sweet ones. I'm still saving my last two.
Okay.
Okay. I gave you Aqib Talib. I gave you Cody Sensabaugh, Dak Prescott.
We have 7 minutes until we're at an hour, and then we'll stop it.
Yeah. What were some of the other ones that I'd come up with? I just don't want to share my favorites. All right,
Say your favorites.
I'll give you my favorite ever. Okay. And then with the one that I think is better, but it's not my favorite. Orleans Darkwa.
Sith.
Orleans Darkwa. That's 100%. He's, of course.
Or he's like, I don't know if he's Sith yet, but he's like definitely going down that path.
Orleans Darkwa is a Sith Lord. He has Dark in his last name. he was the original favorite of the conversation. He's where the whole thing started.
I don't know. I mean, like, Biggs Darklighter is a good guy. So I don't want to even say that Dark is a guaranteed sign of. And Gavin Darklighter eventually led Rogue Squadron.
Orleans Darkwa.
In a universe that doesn't exist anymore. Orleans Darklighter's younger brother.
Darkwa was the one that we were like, forever, we're like, we don't know if Darkwa is, like, it could also be a Lord of the Rings thing. On the seventh day, look to the North Hill. You'll see a man there, Orleans Darkwa. Or like Orleans Darkwa could be like, I knew your father, Orleans Darkwa. He was a pupil of mine.
Yeah,
right.
This all fits.
Yeah, exactly. All right. And my single favorite ever, feared bounty hunter, Barcavius Mingo.
Yes, definitely.
Barcavius Mingo is Bossk, basically. Like,
no, he's not. He doesn't sound like, he sounds like a human.
Really?
Yeah, that's definitely a human name.
Barcavius Mingo?
Yeah, yeah.
So sweet.
I mean, like, it's a weird planet, but yeah, definitely a human.
I think he plays for the Patriots. they're all real names.
Worst team in the country.
Oh. And then, sorry, the most recent one, which sure. is, he's a young, like a Jedi. He's like probably one of the younglings that Anakin kills. Quan Bray.
Yeah, definitely one of the younglings.
kills. Yeah. If you guys are football fans, I hope you enjoyed that as much as we do on Sundays.
I did not enjoy any of the football references, but I'll talk Star Wars with you anytime you want.
I'm
Are you excited for Rogue One?
Oh, so excited. Yeah. I need to ask you off air if you have a ticket for me, because I got lucky and last time you did.
I may.
But I just asked you on air.
So I vaguely might be going to the premiere.
Oh, no.
But
really?
I think I'm trying to get tickets also to see it a second time.
Okay.
And I am getting two. So you may be able to take that second one.
Well, I would love to go, as long as it's not on Saturday the 17th during the day.
I would be expecting it to be Friday and or Thursday at midnight.
Knowing
the Alex Kessler way of seeing Star Wars.
Psyched.
Movies.
I can't wait.
I will cheer so hard. For those who don't know, if you ever want to see a movie with me that I am excited for, I love seeing it on opening day weekends, and I love shouting during
and
the beginning.
I'm a big
clapper. And
seeing Star Wars movie 9 times in theaters.
I saw it 7 times.
Yeah.
Because it's episode 7.
And it was so sweet.
It was really good. I really like it. It was really interesting. The last 4 times were me watching it because people would complain at me about the movie.
Yeah.
And then me watching to see what their complaints are and see if the movie had good answers for it.
Sure.
I think it's great. I think they did a great job. I think it was kind of a repeat of A New Hope. But on the other hand, this was a new version of the movie for kids.
Totally.
And the second act had a lot of problems, but the first act and third act were both kind of perfect.
Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah. All right. So thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you guys next week. Tweet at us if you have a sweet deck you want to play on Frontier. I want to see what deck you would play. And it doesn't have to be one of the ones on MTG Goldfish. I'd love to see if you have some cool ideas for the format.
Sick.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you for your attention. See you later, alligator.